Welcome to the Old Time Radio Daily Westerns. I'm your host, Andrew Ryans, and today is May 26, 2010. Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon.com. If you plan on doing any online shopping, first go to otrwesterns.com/Amazon to start your shopping experience today. Today's episode is going to be Challenge of the Yukon. Original air date for the first one is May 11th, 1944, and the title of that one is going to be Outlaw Dog. The second one is going to be Outlaw's Nemesis, and the original air date on that one's May 18th, 1944. Hope you guys enjoy.
The Challenge of the Yukon. The Wonder Dog King, swiftest and strongest of Eskimo lead dogs, blazes the trail through storm and snow for Sergeant Preston as he meets the Challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston was typical of the small band of Northwest Mounted Police who preserved law and order in the new Northwest country, where the greed for wealth and power led to frequent violence and bloodshed. But in spite of the odds against them, Sergeant Preston and his Wonder Dog King met that challenge, and justice ruled triumphant. As Sergeant Preston walked along Stovepipe City's main street, an icy wind whipped against the Mountie and the great dog walking beside him. Passing the frame building that was the Chilcoot Saloon, the policeman saw a tall, lanky prospector approaching.
Hello there, Tom.
Hi, Sergeant. Hey, this wind's enough to lift a man clear off his feet. How are you, King, old fella?
Well, I see you've got Marty with you.
Sure, me and Marty are pals, huh, boy? He's a smart dog, Sergeant. I always say he's the best in the Yukon. Then there are folks that insist he's second best. I'll agree, King's a handsome-looking animal.
How's the claim coming?
Fine. Sometimes I think I'm the luckiest man alive. Right now, I've got a pocket full of dust.
And you're heading for a poker game, right?
How'd you know?
Well, let's just say I guessed. You know, one of these days, Tom, you're going to lose your shirt.
Oh, not me, Sergeant.
Well, that's what they all say. But good luck, anyway.
Thanks. See you later. Drop into the saloon and watch me clean out the boy's pocket.
At first, Tom McShane showed signs of keeping his threat to clean out the boys' pockets. But then, slowly and steadily, that illogical thing called luck turned against him. He lost what he'd won. He lost the dust he carried into the Chilcoot.
Well, McShane, you ready to quit?
No. No, I'm not quitting. My luck will change, Stutz.
Yeah? What are you putting in this time?
I'll bet the Lady Luck claim against that $5,000 you got in front of you.
Looks like you lose.
Wait a minute. I'm not through yet.
No? Only thing you got left, McShane, is the clothes on your back and the dog sitting beside your chair.
That's right, Tom. You still got Marty.
Oh, no, what? Not Marty.
Well, you never know. Your luck can change, kid.
What do you expect me to do? Play the Lady Luck against his dog?
Ain't no reason why you shouldn't. You got more now than you walked in here with. A darn good-looking dog for my money.
What about it, McShane?
All right, Studs, I'll play this hand for Marty.
Yep, here's my share. It's your deal, Studs.
It was an old story in the Yukon, where stakes were high and a fabulously wealthy prospector could lose over a deck of cards the gold he'd patiently worked from the rich soil over a period of weeks, sometimes months. Tom McShane realized he'd not only lost the Lady Luck claim, but his dog Marty as well. And the realization was followed by a desolate ache that burned his eyes like unshed tears. When he stood and walked quickly toward the door, Marty followed him.
Hey, there goes your dog, Studs.
Oh, no, he ain't. Come back here, you mutt.
Don't ever call that dog a mutt, Studs, you hear?
He's mine now, and I'll call him when I like.
Listen, Marty, I don't know why I did it, boy, but you and me can't be together anymore. Understand? Maybe I'll be able to scrape enough money, and I'll buy you back again. I'd better grab hold of his collar.
When he makes up his mind, there ain't much can hold him back.
Come on, Stud. Lady Luck's changed hands once tonight. I'm going to see if I can't make it twice.
I'm holding him, McShane.
So long, Marty.
The next morning, when Sergeant Preston went to see Tom McShane, he found him in a friend's cabin where he'd been staying while he remained in Stovepipe City.
Well, I heard all about it, Tom.
Yeah.
Marty came back last night?
Uh-huh. Stud just came and got him.
It's a funny thing. A man can switch his loyalties or forget. But a dog never does.
How do you think I feel? Losing the Lady Luck was bad enough, but Marty...
Well, Stud didn't hold the Lady Luck very long. Red told me that shortly after you got out of the game, he won the claim for Malone. A good bit of the dust he'd accumulated.
Oh, I'll never touch another card as long as I live. I've learned my lesson, Sergeant. Malone was in a pretty mean humor. He always is when he starts losing. He took it out on Marty when he found him here this morning.
Yes, I think you have learned your lesson, Tom. You know, gambling had begun to be an obsession with you. I watched it grow, and I knew it would take something important to make you stop. You've learned your lesson, and you'll miss Marty. But that's only half of it. Marty's going to bear the other half, and I'm afraid it won't be easy.
And Sergeant Preston was right. As long as Tom McShane stayed in Stovepipe City, Marty returned to his master. No matter what punishment he received from Studs Malone, the dog's faithfulness never flinched. Finally, when he saw the hopelessness of the situation, Tom left the small settlement. And a short time later, Malone also left, taking with him the dog he'd won in the poker game. Malone had had much bad luck since that night at Chilcoot Saloon. But though he lost everything else, he had a good dog, and he knew he'd need him. And as the months passed, Suggs Malone taught the dog Marty the things that were to make him hated by men who traveled lonely Yukon trails. The dog performed his tasks half-heartedly, knowing that this man would deal with him mercilessly if he refused. At a camp along an isolated trail shortly before darkness, two trappers sat beside the fire.
Hey, Tom, what was that?
Huh?
I heard something. Listen, I'll see what it is.
Well, I'll be... Sam, somebody's been into the ration.
You're right, by golly. Took all the meat we had. But how do... Look, beyond the trail over there. The dog.
Boy, that dirty four-legged thief.
Ah, you missed him.
Must have been that outlaw dog we heard about in Three Forks. I'd like to catch up with that mutt just once. I'd fill him so full of buckshot he'd only be good for paperweight.
At Three Forks, the head of the Law and Order Commission talked to Sergeant Preston. With the Mountie was Tom McShane, who stood silently listening to the conversation.
We have definite information, Sergeant, that the dog is in this vicinity. The description I've given you is one we've gotten from several men who had the misfortune to meet him.
I know the dog. We'll set out immediately.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll get a few of my men together and we'll go with you. Stealing food in the Yukon is a serious offense. And in this case, it's led to the death of two prospectors.
Sergeant Preston and Tom McShane, with a small group of men, set out to locate the outlawed dog and his master. King ran far ahead of the Mountie's team, pausing at intervals to let the sleds catch up with him. At one point along the trail, the policeman called a halt while he examined what had apparently been a campsite. The men of the Law and Order Commission gathered to look at tracks. It was then that King noticed Tom McShane's sled pulling away from the rest of them.
I see him, fella. Let him go. I have a hunch he's trying to do some private detective work. But I think he's chosen the right direction. We'll start after him in a few minutes.
Tom McShane approached the camp near the edge of Blackstone Creek quietly. He noticed the ledge jutting out over the creek just a few yards away from a stretch of rapids. It was there Studs Malone stood when the young man confronted him.
Well, Studs, it seems we meet again.
Who's that? Well, it ain't my friend, the prize poker player.
Don't reach for your gun. I've got you covered.
So I noticed. What do you got in your mind, McShane?
Where's Marty?
Oh, that's it, huh? Well, he's out on a little job. Probably getting some fresh air.
Why, you... you made him the hunted creature that he is. That dog didn't have a bad streak in him.
No, and he learned pretty fast. You ain't gonna fire that gun, McShane, and you know it.
No. I'm not gonna kill you, Studs. I oughta, but I won't. I'll just stay here and keep you from...
Yeah.
Get away from me! Get away, or... You what? I'll take that gun. No, you don't! You...
As the two men fought, Studs Malone edged his opponent nearer and nearer to the creek. Beneath them, under the ledge, the waters rushed dizzily toward the rapids. Malone had the advantage of greater strength, but Tom McShane refused to admit defeat. Every blow must count. It was then he heard a dog racing toward them through the timber.
Marty!
That's all I need.
Yeah, you did me a good turn that time, Mutt, when he turned to look for you. Kind of hard to swim weighted down with a Mackinaw, ain't it? You'll be pulled over the rapids, McShane, before you...
Before the man could finish the sentence, he saw Marty leap over the ledge. And once in the icy water, the dog swam toward Tom McShane.
All right, Studs, put up your hands.
Preston!
Yes. You know this man from the description, Hibbs?
Yes, of course. But where's the dog?
Hey, look there, out in the creek, over toward the rapids. There's a man in there,
he'll
be drowned.
Probably a log, Jim. Lots of them come down the creek and get smashed going over the rapids. Put the handcuffs on this man, maybe we'll
take... It is a man.
It's your friend McShane, Marty. He fell over the ledge.
But there's a dog. That's Marty. Marty's pulling him away from the rapids.
Hey, there's your outlaw dog. That's the one I saw myself.
The great dog King stood on the ledge. His eyes glued to the two figures caught in the treacherous current. The spray from the rapids rose slightly beyond them. It was a mad swirl of water, and the men watching held their breath. And then it happened. King saw it first. The log caught in the current, zigzagging crazily in the chopping water. As Marty swam, he struggled desperately. The log seemed about to skirt the man and his rescuer, when it veered sharply, striking the dog's head and knocking him senseless. Almost instantly, King hit the icy water. He was caught in the current, but he fought it, struggling to reach the man who was frantically trying to keep afloat. And as Tom reached out to grab King, the great dog felt the impact as Marty was helplessly thrown against his master. Scarcely knowing what he did, the man put one arm around his dog's neck, and with the other he held fast to King. And King knew he must drain every ounce of strength to pull his double burden to safety. Halfway toward the rocks where Preston stood, Marty began to swim. King had battled the current to pull them away from the rapids. And now they pulled slowly but steadily toward the ledge.
Hey, you, Jim, get a stout piece of rope to the slant. That's it, fella. Keep pulling, boy.
It was a short time later, and on the ledge close to Preston's feet, King lay exhausted. He felt his strength coming back to him, and he looked up to find Marty, a heap of wet, straggly fur, laying close to his master, a dog's nose beside the face of the man he loved.
Oh, I still think he ought to be shot. He's alive, thanks to your dog, Sergeant. Stealing food in the Yukon, same as murder.
No, don't let him.
Jim, I want to ask you a question. What would be your verdict toward a man who was basically good, but fell into bad company and became an outlaw? And then what would you say if you saw that man make an attempt to save a life at the cost of his own?
I'd say he ought to... Well, he ought to be given more than a fair chance.
Exactly. You saw this dog make a brave attempt to save Tom's life. There's the criminal. Studs, you're under arrest. And as for Marty, he's going to be paroled to Tom.
Sergeant, I...
And Mountie saw the gratitude in Tom McShane's eyes. And he saw, too, the unquestioning devotion shining in the eyes of the dog when he looked at his master. Preston turned and looked at King. And as he felt the great dog's warm tongue touch his hand, he appreciated the bond that existed between this man and Marty.
That's all right, Tom. I understand. Yes, fella, you've done a great job. The case is closed.
Yeah. These copyrighted dramas originate in the studios of WXYZ Detroit, and all characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious. They're sent to you each week at the same time. Jack McCarthy speaking. This is the Michigan Radio Network.
The challenge of the Yukon. The Wonder Dog King, swiftest and strongest of Eskimo lead dogs, blazes the trail through storm and snow for Sergeant Preston as he meets the challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston was typical of the small band of Northwest Mounted Police who preserved law and order in the new Northwest country, where the greed for wealth and power led to frequent violence and bloodshed. But in spite of the odds against them, Sergeant Preston and his Wonder Dog King met that challenge, and justice ruled triumphant. In the small frame building that served as a jail in Fort Munn, Jim McKenzie had a visitor. When the guard opened the cell door, he thought there was a strange resemblance in the two men. The criminal sitting on the edge of the cot and the tall, heavy-set prospector who'd asked to see him. It was less than a physical likeness, more a similarity in manner. If the guard wondered about it, he dismissed the thought, though he had reason to remember it later. As soon as he was out of earshot, the two men began talking.
That had happened, Jim. Now tell me about it.
It was that Mountie Preston. If it hadn't been for him and that dog of his, I'd be as free as you are, Pete.
So you walked into a Mountie, huh?
Walked into him? I'd have got away from him if it hadn't been for that mutt. I swung my rifle on him. We were standing about so far from the edge of a ravine, see?
Yeah.
1 minute that dog ain't anywhere in sight, and the next minute, when I just had my finger ready to squeeze the trigger, he comes tearing toward us on the other side of that ravine. Well, I didn't think nothing of it, because that hole was a good 15 feet wide. I figured I'd drop the Mountie and then get the dog.
What happened?
Well, it happened so fast. When I remember it, it seems like lightning. All I know is that before I could pull the trigger, that dog's flying across the ravine, and he lands square on top of me. That's the story.
So you let a dog get the best of you.
He ain't like no other dog, Pete. I never saw a dog that could clear a jump like that with space to spare. There's not another dog in the Yukon could do that. Honest. Now, listen, you ain't gonna let me rot in this hole, are you?
You know better than that, Jim. You might be dumb, but you're my brother. Now listen. Tonight I'll be outside shortly after dark. You'll be ready.
Two weeks later, Sergeant Preston sat in Inspector Maynard's office with King, the great dog, settled on the floor close to his master's feet. Corporal Standish, one of the younger members of the force, sat at the far side of the room, anxiously watching the inspector's face.
Sergeant, you remember Jim McKenzie?
King and I both remember McKenzie, sir.
Well, what both of you don't know is that he was visited by his brother while he was jailed in Fort Munn, and they must have planned a break. And Jim McKenzie was shot trying to escape. His brother got away.
I see.
But we've got a definite lead on Pete McKenzie's hideout near Tawaga Lake.
Near Tawaga Lake?
Right. Since I'm especially anxious for Pete to be trapped with the furs, I believe he's hidden somewhere near the lake. I want you two to take him unawares.
Well, that sounds like a good idea to me. We can be ready to start immediately.
Good. But one thing. Let me caution you about revealing your identities. If he should suspect who you are...
I understand, sir.
Exactly. It would cost both of you your lives. Well, good luck, gentlemen, and happy hunting.
It was a week later. With King leading the dogs, the two Mounties arrived at Tawaga Lake sooner than they had expected. And though Preston had thought much of the characteristics of the two McKenzie brothers, he had not yet formed any plans. Dressed as trappers, the two men sighted a village of Yukon Indians in the distance as they traveled the snow-covered trail.
What do you plan to do, Sergeant?
Well, I don't know yet. That'll depend largely on circumstances. Oh, and Stan.
Yeah?
Remember, from now on, call me Bill.
Oh, I forgot. I'm so used to saying Sergeant. I'll watch it, though. But what about these Indians? Do you know any in this village?
No, this is off my patrol. They're the Tawaga tribe. Oh, King, hold your huskies.
The two men found the Indians kind. They were urged to stay at the village, where they might replenish their supplies if necessary. As Chief Charlie, his young son, Preston, and Stan discussed the game to be found on the shores of the lake, Preston looked up to see the man he recognized as Pete McKenzie enter the tent.
Howdy, Chief.
How? Oh.
Well, Chief Charlie, you seem to have a lot of company.
Him trade skin, Indian make heap good deal.
I told the Chief he drives a hard bargain. What are you doing up this way, stranger?
Oh, we're hunting?
Yeah, yeah. Game's plentiful, all right. Where are you from?
Almost any place. Where are you from?
Good enough. Just forget I asked you.
Early the next morning, Preston set out with the young Indian and Corporal Standish. Fleetfoot had dropped a young lynx, and as the youth stooped low to truss its legs...
Hey, what is it, boy? Fleetfoot, look out!
You got it just in time, Bill.
That mother of lynx, you saved my life.
I wouldn't have been ready if King hadn't warned me, Fleetfoot. I think we better get back to the village now, Stan.
I'll carry the carcass back. That bullet hit her right between the eyes.
Later that day, Pete McKenzie sat down in the tent with the policeman.
Yeah, you sure can handle a gun, stranger. I took a look at that lynx myself. It was a clean shot.
Thanks.
I'd say a man who could shoot like that had had a lot of practice.
Maybe so.
You don't have to be so cagey with me. Of course, I admire anybody can keep his mouth shut. And I spotted you two right away.
What do you mean, you spotted us?
That's what I said. What's the law got on you? Well, so maybe it ain't any of my business. But I could use you two.
How much is in it?
Oh, well, we're getting someplace. A couple of weeks ago, I lost my partner, see? Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll split his half with you two. You can take it from me, this ain't no petty cash deal. We'll mush tomorrow. I want to get out of this place before some of them Mounties come nosing around. Much as I hate the sight of them, there's no use asking for trouble.
Shortly after daybreak, the two Mounties left the Indian village with Pete McKenzie. A few hours later, McKenzie called a halt while he examined the map he carried. To get his bearings, he climbed the slope that ascended in the side of a rise that afforded a jump for skiers. Preston walked with him, the ever-faithful King at his heels.
Let's see. Yeah, this is it, all right. I was afraid we might have taken the wrong turn back along the trail.
Sure is a good view from here.
Well, might as well get going. Look at them mutts fight, will you?
Line them up, will you, boy?
As King heard Preston's order, he obeyed immediately. Crouching low, he jumped. And as the outlaw watched him, the precision and control of the dog in a perfectly timed leap brought something to life in his mind. He turned on his two companions.
Hey, that dog. That was a good 20-foot jump. He made it without batting an eye. Like he was used to jumping.
What's the idea of the gun?
I should have recognized that pooch. I heard all about him from a man that had good reason to remember him. Now get moving, both of you.
King didn't see McKenzie pull the gun, but as he stood lining the dogs up, his sharp ears caught the threat in the man's voice. Moving with amazing swiftness, he raced to Preston's side. But the outlaw was prepared. His first shot caught Standish in the shoulder. The young Mountie fell against Preston with such force that the two men rolled back down the slope, King sliding with them.
I've got you covered. I'm coming down.
Stand.
I'm all right. Just my shoulder.
King, listen to me, boy. Go back to the Indian village. Understand? Get Fleetfoot. Bring him here. Go on, fella.
Missed him. That muck moves like brief lightning. And I've got you, Preston.
Preston knew that alone King would cover ground in half the time it had taken them to travel by sled. But he wondered if the great dog would bring help in time to prevent Mackenzie's escape. 30 minutes later, they arrived at a cave on the edge of the lake where the stolen furs were hidden. The man who faced Preston with a fierce hatred in his eyes forced the Mountie to tie the corporal's hands and feet.
Now I'll tie you up, Sergeant. And while you're, resting here, I'll load the canoe with the skin.
I suppose you think you'll make a getaway, huh, Mackenzie?
I know I will. You two won't last long in the cold and will be a slower death than if I was to shoot you. I've dreamed of having a chance like this, but I never thought it would happen.
As King raced over the trail, running far ahead of the young Indian sled, he strained every muscle in long, powerful strides. He had but one thought. His head throbbed with it. He must reach his master. When the great dog reached the spot where Preston was tied hand and foot, the Indian sled and noisy team could be heard in the distance. The Mountie's captor had finished loading the canoe, and at the dog's approach, threw a look over his shoulder as he shoved off. King set to work immediately, scissoring the ropes about Preston's wrists.
Good boy, King. Good boy, fella.
Fleetfoot, I hear his dogs. He only gets here in time to stop Mackenzie.
King turned and saw the outlaw paddling furiously. Preston's hands were free now, and the dog's hatred for the man who'd held a gun on his master flared. This time, he'd stop him. King was in the water, and he swam straight toward the boat, oblivious of the current pulling at his body. Mackenzie saw him coming with a sure and relentless speed that was like certain death. The man reached to the forward part of the boat for his rifle.
Get that dog right between the eyes. Gotta get that rifle. Blasted canoe, don't!
But as Mackenzie leaned forward, his arm outstretched to grab the rifle, the canoe spun dizzily in the current. Steadying himself with an effort, he realized it was a choice of getting his rifle or keeping the canoe afloat. Regaining his balance, he took up the paddles. But King was getting closer and closer.
Stay away from me, mother. I'll brain you with this paddle. Stay away, you hear?
From the shore, Sergeant Preston, the Indian Fleetfoot, and Corporal Standish watched the great dog. The young Mountie couldn't believe what he saw when the dog deliberately upset the canoe, throwing Mackenzie thrashing into the water. A short time later, Pete Mackenzie was a sullen prisoner. The Indian had rescued most of the stolen furs from the lake, and while Sergeant Preston looked at the corporal's wound, Fleetfoot and King guarded the outlaw.
How's it feel, Stan?
Almost as good as new.
You know, it's strange, Mackenzie. Jim warned you about King. It was because of King you recognized us as Mounties. And yet this dog was as responsible for your arrest as he was for your brother's.
Sergeant, tell me, why did you send King away? After what I've just seen, I think he could have handled Pete.
Pete hated King. He would have killed him, I'm sure. I didn't want to risk King's life.
No savvy. You not trapper?
Well, in a way we are, Fleetfoot. This is Corporal Standish. I'm Sergeant Preston. And this is King. Of the Northwest Mounted Police. Yes, fella. Thanks to you, the case is closed.
These copyrighted dramas originate in the studios of WXYZ Detroit. And all characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious. They are sent to you each week at the same time. Jack McCarthy speaking. This is the Michigan Radio Network.
Okay, hopefully you guys enjoy those episodes. Send me an email, let me know.
podcast at otrwesterns.com. Call, leave me a voicemail, 707-98-OTRDW. Again, that's 707-986-8739. Also, if you follow us in iTunes, you go in there and you don't have to leave a comment, but at least give us a high rating. It helps other people who are looking for old-time radio find us, and that's the main goal, is so more people listen. That's actually what I would love. Right now, we're up to a little over 500 people, and we spike sometimes up into 600 people, and I would love to see that get all the way pushed up to 1,000. So if you can go in there, I'm not so much on the voting and other things like some other podcasts, but do go in there and say, hey, I love this show, 5 stars. If you want, leave a rating so people can see. If it's negative, it's negative. But if it's positive, that's great too. Okay, I think that's it. And we'll see you guys tomorrow for an episode of Have Gun Will Travel. Thanks. Have a great day.